Hello and welcome, this is Dr. Andrew Jones, and welcome to my brand new podcast called Veterinary Secrets. This is episode 2. In today's podcast, we're going to be covering the 15 foods that dogs and cats should never eat. I'm going to talk a little bit about the current fundraiser for an amazing dog that tried to save his owner from a house fire. I'm going to answer a listener's question, what do you do for eye stains on a poodle, which may help many of you, and a little bit about my upcoming webinar, which I want you all to be on. A little bit about the podcast, I've had some very positive feedback, we're still in the early stages of clients just discovering about this podcast. Now, Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. What you can do, if you have iTunes, just go to iTunes.com, download that, and on iTunes, just search under podcast for Veterinary Secrets, I'm going to come up, which is great. You can also get Veterinary Secrets podcast as a little app right on your phone. So what you can do, go to this, bring up this URL on your phone, vetsecrets.podbean.com/mobile/. I'm going to post this on the blog. But you go to vetsecrets.podbean.com/mobile/. Click on that link and Veterinary Secrets will come up. You're actually going to download. You're going to have a little app right there on your screen. So you can click on it anytime, re-listen to these podcasts. And as new ones come up each week, you're going to be able to listen to the new ones. A little bit of a discussion about my upcoming webinar. It's the Natural Animal Care Webinar. It's a brand new webinar. What I'm going to do is I'm covering a whole number of illnesses that you're going to be able to actually then treat your dogs and cats at home. You're going to know exactly when it's okay to treat your pet at home, when you need to see your veterinarian, new alternative remedies for pet allergies, arthritis, cancer, urinary tract disease, diabetes, ear infections, fleas, coughing, seizures, and more. You're going to get your questions answered by me, Dr. Jones, and then you're going to learn how to start using herbs, homeopathy, acupressure, and massage to quickly heal your pet at home. So that webinar is happening in the next 3 days, but you still have time to sign up. Just go to veterinarysecrets.com/webinar and you can get yourself signed up for this webinar. So let's get right into today's podcast because we're going to be covering a whole number of things. So in particular, our first main article, you know, what are the 15 foods, these common human foods that your dogs and cats should never eat? Clearly, there's a number of ones that many of us are aware of. And I think of things such as chocolate, alcohol, coffee, but there's lesser known ones that you really need to be aware of, such as grapes, nutmeg, onion, artificial sweeteners in gum. And then the product is called xylitol. So what I'm going to do is give you an overview of these specific toxins, talk in detail about a few of them, and then also show you what you should be doing if your dog or cat ingests them. So let's get right into this first article. Alcohol. Clearly it's sweet. I think we all are aware of it. We're probably aware of, you know, the certain toxic effects on our own bodies. Obviously on our dogs and cats, they're much more sensitive to it. The problem is it's meant there's these sweetened alcohols and it'll attract dogs and they're likely to also drink it. When we start to see with the sweetened ones, you know, such as the ones containing vodka, the higher concentrated alcohol, that can lead to intoxication, especially if we're dealing with the smaller dogs, you know, such as a poodle. So what are the common clinical signs, such as in people? Incoordination or ataxia, excitement, depression, excessive urination, their breathing rate can get slowed, and in severe cases, it can lead to cardiac arrest and death. Clearly, you need to be aware of, you know, alcohol that's never being left out, obviously never being offered to your pet. Avocado, surprising one. I mean, I wasn't even initially aware of it. But in some of the avocado leaves, the fruit, the seeds, and bark, they can be toxic. They contain a toxic principle called pyrazine. The Guatemalan variety is most toxic, but they all have toxic potential. So first of all, it's just being aware of, never including avocado, have any types of avocado with any of your home diets you've been making for your dog, and never even just offering this to them. It can cause vomiting, diarrhea, severe gastrointestinal distress. Chocolate in all forms. I think many of us are aware of chocolate and the potential toxic portions of chocolate. But I think what we need to do is sort of understand, in particular, which ones are more toxic and how much is toxic and when you need to be concerned or not. So first of all, the toxic component, primarily it's theobromine. Secondary is caffeine, which is in coffee. The theobromine is found in highest concentrations in the dark chocolate, and as the chocolate gets lighter, there's less and less theobromine. But what it does, it affects your dog's intestinal system, you know, leading to vomiting, diarrhea. It can affect the nervous system, such as the brain, the cardiovascular system, the heart and the lungs, and the kidneys. The symptoms of chocolate poisoning are based upon the amount of chocolate has been consumed, the type of chocolate, the time since ingestion. The most common clinical sign, our dogs typically eat chocolate or gastrointestinal, in terms of an upset stomach, vomiting, diarrhea. But not uncommonly, and I've seen in many clients, is hyperactivity, restlessness, elevated heart rate, increased drinking, urination. The most serious clinical signs are when the nervous system is affected, and they can be seen as tremors, seizures, increased breathing rate, high body temperature, known as hyperthermia, and in some serious cases, coma and or death. The toxic and potentially fatal dose of chocolate, the dose is 60 milligrams per kilo. So when we equate to that, you know, a 10-pound dog needs to consume about 300 milligrams of chocolate. So let's sort of figure out, you know, what that is, or what does that mean to you as far as amount. So let's look at how much theobromine is in certain types of chocolate, and we best know if needs be concerned about chocolate poisoning in your dog or not. So a 5-ounce milk chocolate bar, which can contain 250 milligrams of theobromine, whereas, you know, a dark chocolate bar contain up to 600 milligrams. And one unsweetened baking chocolate square, let's think of those, contains 400 milligrams of theobromine per square. So a poodle weighing 10 pounds can be fatally poisoned by as little as one milk chocolate bar containing 250 milligrams of theobromine, whereas a larger 75-pound, 80-pound golden retriever is going to need to eat eight of those milk chocolate bars to become seriously ill. But on the other hand, you know, when we look at the amount, dark chocolate and baker's chocolate are far more toxic. You know, the 70-pound, on the other hand, the dark chocolate and the baker's chocolate are far more toxic. The 75-pound golden only needs to consume three of the dark chocolate bars, potentially be fatally poisoned. So you just got to be aware of, you know, how toxic is it, and just know, I mean, as little as, you know, one square, one chocolate bar potentially toxic to a small dog such as a poodle. As the darker the chocolate and we're consuming more of this dark chocolate, more higher chance that it is, you know, potentially more toxic. So being aware of, one, never offering it to your dog, and two, just keeping it out of reach, because as we know, especially certain dogs and puppies in particular, they're going to eat many things. Clearly, the first thing is being aware of how much have they consumed you need to be concerned about or not. If it's just a couple bites of a milk chocolate bar where it's not dark chocolate, you're likely okay, especially if we're dealing with a larger dog. But a small dog is eating two baker squares of dark chocolate, you need to be seeing a veterinarian as soon as possible. If you're a period of time away, they need to look at inducing vomiting, giving activated charcoal. Coffee in all forms. Coffee period, it contains dangerous components. In particular, we know caffeine, and the components are also called xanthines. They can cause central nervous system or urinary tract system damage and heart muscle stimulation. Clearly avoid ever giving coffee to your pet. Fatty foods. So the primary concern here is with, you know, severe stomach upset, gastroenteritis, and in some cases they can even trigger a condition called pancreatitis. So you really want to just be conscious of the amount of fat that you're feeding your pets, in particular your dogs. And I think about something. I think about bacon and bacon fat. Is it fine to give them bacon occasionally? Yes, it is. I give bacon to my own dogs. But am I very conscious of the amount of fat that's included in that? Yes, I am. I minimize the amount of fat. Macadamia nuts. They contain an unfortunately unknown toxin, but it can affect the digestive and nervous systems and muscles of dogs. It's even led to paralysis. Even just a small number of nuts and even the butter can be toxic. So being aware of that, no macadamia nuts, especially no macadamia nut butter. Clearly any moldy or spoiled foods, when we think of any type of moldy food, we never feed it to ourselves, obviously never feeding it to our dogs or our cats. Many molds contain a type of toxin called an aflatoxin. It's thought to be a common cause of compost toxicity, and that's what I saw many times of veterinary practice. It'll cause very serious GI signs, vomiting, diarrhea. It can lead to sort of neurologic signs such as muscle tremors, incoordination, elevated body temperature, excessive salivation. And in many cases, I would do blood tests and we'd find secondary liver damage. Clearly, it's keeping the compost protected, never feeding moldy foods to your pet. Fortunately, being aware that in most cases, most dogs responded well to symptomatic treatments such as IV fluids and or sometimes use things like products such as herbs, such as milk thistle to help deal with the liver damage. Onions, onion powder. Onions contain the toxic ingredient called thiosulfate. Pets affected by onion toxicity can develop anemia, and as little as one onion can cause this. Fortunately, all dogs recover once they stop ingesting onions, though the blood changes resolve and they're back to normal. It's just clearly avoiding onions. Grapes and raisins and grapes. I mean, it's within the last sort of 10 years where this has really come to the prominence. We don't clearly understand what's happening, but we are seeing it. You know, as few as 6 grapes and raisins have caused acute kidney failure in some dogs. The toxic ingredient is not yet known. There's no known treatment. What is the big solution? Just avoid ever feeding any grapes or any raisins to your dogs. Yeah, I mean, it's really something. Fortunately, I was yet to see it in veterinary practice. You know, when I first started out, you know, I had fed my dogs raisins, just not knowing it. Seeing the number of cases, especially reported to poison control, it's just huge and just staggering. So just being really conscious of this and just never offering or feeding it. Yeast or yeast dough. I mean, it's something you never think about, but it that the yeast or that, especially the yeast dough and uncooked bread will rise in your pet's stomach, causing severe gastrointestinal distress, bloating, and in some cases cause signs of alcohol toxicity we talked about earlier. Mostly it's an upset stomach, vomiting, and diarrhea. Xylitol. Yeah, there is one you'd never think about, and it's an artificial sweetener found in many of the sugar-free products. You think of gums, candies, etc. Very prevalent. If you're to pick up any, just go to any grocery store, pick up the sugar-free, pick up a gum and look at it. Chances are xylitol is going to be in that. It's even in some mouthwashes or these oral hygiene products for our dog. Unfortunately, the xylitol itself can cause signs relating to a sudden drop in blood sugar, leading to incoordination, collapse, and seizures. Clearly, the big solution is never ever feeding any of these sugar-free products to your pets. I mean, just one stick of gum can cause these clinical signs in a poodle. And if a dog, such as a small 10-pound dog, has consumed an entire sort of pack of gum, they can also get secondary liver damage. Apples, apricots, cherries, peaches, and plums. There are other ones. Ingestions of large amounts of stems, seeds, and leaves of these fruits can be toxic. They contain a cyanide-type compound, and signs of toxicity include apprehension, dilated pupils, difficulty breathing, hyperventilation, and shock. The big note that I need to reinforce is that it's the seeds and stems that contain the toxic component, not the fruit itself. So just avoid the seeds, avoid the stems. Green-looking potatoes, potato peelings. Potatoes and other solanum species, including tomato, are members of the nightshade family. They contain an ingredient called solanine and other toxic alkaloids, which if eaten in large enough amounts can produce drooling, severe stomach upset, including vomiting, diarrhea, loss of appetite, drowsiness, central nervous system, depression, confusion, behavioral changes, weakness, dilated pupils, and slowed heart rate. The big point is, one, don't be feeding green potatoes. Clearly, potatoes are okay to feed to most pets. You can cook them up for most dogs, and never feeding them potato peelings. Nutmeg, another one that I had very little knowledge of. High levels of nutmeg can be toxic, even fatal. The toxin component is not known. Signs of toxicity include CNS signs, such as tremors, seizures, nervous system abnormalities, or even death. Ones that we just related to earlier, the solanum species related to potatoes. Tomatoes, tomato leaves and stems, in particular the green parts. The green parts of the tomato plant are considered toxic because they contain the solanine, which has the potential to produce significant gastrointestinal and central nervous system effects. So then what do you do if your pet, your dog, or cat isn't eating any of these toxic foods? First is, you know, being aware of how much have they consumed, what are the clinical signs. And if your pet is showing any serious signs of ingesting a poison, it's important that they be examined and treated by your veterinarian as soon as possible, an emergency veterinarian. You know, some toxins can progress, lead to severe neurologic changes such as seizures, even for instance in chocolate. If you suspect something like antifreeze poisoning, it's going to be treated within 4 to 6 hours before irreversible kidney damage occurs. But in some cases, one, you know, your pet has consumed this thing. Two, you're a distance from a veterinarian, so you need to be aware of doing other things at home. So for most of these cases and most of these particular poisons, the big point here is getting them to throw that up, getting them to vomit. I need to make note that you should never induce vomiting if something caustic has been consumed, you know, such as grain or bleach. We're not talking about that today. We're talking about foods. So to induce vomiting, the dose is giving 1 teaspoon per 10 pounds of body weight of 3% hydrogen peroxide. If your pet doesn't vomit in 10 minutes, you can repeat it again. Never do more than 2 treatments of peroxide. And this should be done in conjunction with you being on the phone, you're talking to an emergency veterinarian, you're unable to get your pet in as soon as possible, and then you'd be doing this. You'd be inducing vomiting. And I've had to do this in my own dog. He got into a whole pile of compost. Clearly, he was going to be ill. I induced vomiting. I did it by giving him peroxide. The next thing, and something I suggest many clients have on hand, there's a product called activated charcoal. What's it does? It helps bind whatever toxic ingredient your dog or cat has ingested, and it'll delay absorption of that, so then it binds in the stomach, binds the intestinal tract, and it can pass undigested out of your dog or your cat. You can give it as a capsule form, and you also get it as a liquid form. Just a really good thing to have on hand. And clearly the last big point I need to make is prevention. You know, you just want to make sure that all this stuff is never not available to your dogs or your cats, and it's just kept out of your pet's reach, and clearly that they're not getting into them themselves. So just being aware of it. I mean, I think they're just good things we all need to be aware of, and just be conscious of, you know, what else, especially when you're dealing with a puppy or you're dealing with an inquisitive kitten, they're not able to get into any of these things I just mentioned. So now let's get on to the second part of today's podcast. Right now there's a dog, a boxer cross, living in a basement suite with her owner. He's unfortunately since died. They had a house fire going on. Her owner's not able to get out. You know, what does she do? She doesn't leave. She actually stayed on top. She was on top of her owner, trying to shield her owner from the fire, from the smoke and the flames. So firefighters were finally able to get in, able to get her out of this suite in this fire, able to get her owner out. Unfortunately, her owner died in hospital. So she is now being treated for smoke inhalation and fire damage and fire burns. She's got serious damage to her lungs. So she's on a respirator. She's got oxygen, and she's got such serious lung damage. And it's just amazing, first of all, to see this happen. Second, just to see that a dog is able to act in such a way. If anything, just reinforces, you know, my whole belief that, you know, we really undervalue our pets in many ways, or many other people do. You know, this is one, like, huge, great example. Do I think my own dogs are going to act quite so heroic? I hope my one dog, Lewis, would act somewhat heroic if I was in an emergency situation. But many dogs do, and I don't imagine Harmon's owner ever imagined this would ever happen to him, and he would have a dog that would react so heroically in the first place. It's just so impressive. So right now, we're actually in the process of fundraising for her, because we're looking at serious veterinary costs to pay for her care. And the goal is to actually raise up to $5,000. I personally am donating to this cause. So the fundraising is happening on CrowdRise. So what you can do is go to crowdrise.com/CarmenLedford-hospital-donations, or just search Carmen Ledford Hospital Donations and you'll find it. It's under crowdrise.com/CarmenLedford-hospital-donations. Yeah, very, very, very impressive. The next part of the podcast I want to discuss is a question that came in from one of our readers. And in particular, it's, they've got a poodle that's got eye staining. What this means, the veterinary term for this is called epiphora. So what epiphora is that we always have eyes, our eyes are always producing tears. That's a normal way, and that's what keeps our eyes lubricated and working normally. But what can happen, in especially many of our smaller breeds, is the tear ducts themselves. So there's little openings just in the eyelids themselves that are supposed to drain these tears. These ducts can obstruct or be plugged up. So when this happens, is that these tears, instead of being absorbed in between the eyelids and being drained into the nose, these ducts themselves, they don't work anymore, and we're seeing these tears run over top of the eyelid and into the corner of our pet's eyes. And just think of many of these small breeds that you may have seen, and maybe you have it in your own dog. And I said the veterinary term is called epiphora. Most cases, it's not they're actually producing too many tears. It's just the ducts themselves are obstructed. In some cases, it can be from chronic inflammation. There may be some other inflammatory disorder going on. It may be just genetic-wise, we just got really small tear ducts. No question, in veterinary practice, and some of these dogs, I would sedate them, and we try to open those tear ducts up. Clearly, that's the ideal thing. We just have your duct draining normally. So the big question is, you know, what can I give at home, or what can I give my dog at home to, one, help with this tear staining, and two, maybe potentially have them produce less tears? Clearly, the simple thing, there's a number of different things you can look at doing that may be potentially beneficial. First of all, if you're understanding what it is or what epiphora is, we're dealing with blocked tear ducts. Using a warm compress, just a hot cloth, you know, just hot enough that you're still okay, you can touch your skin, putting it on your dog, especially your dog's lower eyelid, twice a day. Do that for a week. In some cases, that's enough to help open up those obstructed tear ducts. A warm compress. And at the same point, I'm going to have you use that warm cloth just to wipe the corner of your pet's eyes, doing that twice a day, because you want to keep that as clean as possible. So some of the staining just comes from the tears there, but also secondary, those tears, they contain pigment that will actually stain. It's going to stain, especially the white fur if you see it, but also it's a good source for bacteria to grow in and cause more of an issue. So just by the fact of using the warm compress, you're wiping, regularly cleaning the corner of your dog's eyes, that's going to really help. Secondly, you can look at doing some of the remedies that I talk about for inflammation or for eye infections, because we know there's inflammation that actually gets plugged up those tear ducts. So in some cases, some of these same topical remedies that we'll use for eye infections may help. So one tea, black tea. I mean, of all the things I discussed, I've used it many times in my own dog, and many clients use it. Really can be beneficial, and in some cases will help for this epiphora or eye staining. So you just make up a strong cup, half a cup of black tea, draw it up in a 3cc syringe, give that 4 times, 1 to 2 drops, both eyes, 4 times throughout the day. Do it for a week, see if it's beneficial or not. You want to make sure that remake the tea every day, so you're making a new cup of tea every day, but that's it. And make sure that it's warmed up before you're giving it. You don't want it too cold, you don't want it too hot. So you just want to be giving that warm tea, 1 to 2 drops, 3 to 4 times daily. Do it for a week, see if it's beneficial. Another thing you consider doing is honey, which I've tried in a number of different cases. What I have found, I don't have to give honey as often as the tea. So I would take a half a cup of warm water, and I would take a tablespoon of honey. Preferably, you're looking at unpasteurized, the darker type honey, such as buckwheat honey. Dissolve that in the water, mix it up very thoroughly. Again, drop a 3cc syringe, and I did the same thing. And I was just making that up once a day, and then I would giving that. And I was doing it 2 to 3 drop, and giving that 2 to 3 times a day. So that's another option. Then a couple more things that you may not be aware of. One, there's a product called lysine. So it's a naturally occurring amino acid. It is in my supplement, Ultimate Canine, Ultimate Feline Health Formula. In particular, we have used L-lysine because it's got antiviral activity. So what we do is we've given it for these cats that get recurring herpes virus infections. They get these red puffy eyes that can cause chronic tearing. But in other cases, it does seem to have some anti-inflammatory component to it. So in some animals respond to the lysine. So you can give it as a paste. It's called NSL paste, available from your veterinarian. So that's one option. Another option is then, getting my supplement, Ultimate Canine or Ultimate Feline Health Formula. Another ingredient called probiotics. These are these healthy bacteria that I talk about many times. Think of whatever's in yogurt. And if you're eating yogurt, you're eating probiotics. That is the good bacteria. Because we know what's happening in some cases is that we're getting different bacteria colonizing areas around. So they're colonizing in that area around your pet's eye where he's got that tear discharge. And that is the source of infection. And that's what's causing the staining. So if you can give the good bacteria back into your pet's intestinal tract, they're able to better, their immune system is much more effective. And then secondary, they're able to deal with some of that infection that's going on in the corner of their eye. So I found a number of pets have responded to probiotics. If you've ever tried them, you've got a dog with that before, definitely worth trying. So what's happening is you've got the natural pigment that's in the eye tears themselves that is staining your pet's fur, especially if they've got white, they're a white breed. So then you can look at doing something like 3% hydrogen peroxide, which we just talked about, if you're having to induce vomiting. So you can just take a damp little cotton ball or something, or even just a Q-tip. And after you've cleaned that stain, where you've used your damp cloth, or you've your warm compress, and then just be really cautious that you never get any of that peroxide in your pet's eye, and just wipe the corner of the fur with the peroxide. So in many cases, that's enough, and that will actually deal with the staining. Ultimately, the best solutions if we can open up that tear duct is unobstructed. In many cases, we can't. I want to make a little comment. There's a product called Angel Eyes, which many clients would ask me about. It contains an antibiotic called Tylosin. Yes, it is effective. In many cases, it works. But it's working because it's actually altering the bacteria. But it's an antibiotic. And by doing so, it's affecting your pet's good bacteria all throughout your pet's body. Really not one I would advise in any sort of long-term. Well, thank you. So I think we're at the end of this is podcast number 2 of Veterinary Secrets. Thanks for sticking with me through the end of the podcast. I'm hoping you're finding this is helpful. If you have any questions about the podcast, feel free to respond on my blog. You can send me an email to podcast@veterinarysecrets.com and I'll respond to those and I'll try to include, and what I want to do is including your questions on sort of upcoming episodes. So thanks again. This is Dr. Andrew Jones and I'll be talking to you next week.